It's time for episode 547 of the Clockwise Podcast from Relay FM, recorded Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. Clockwise, four people, four tech topics, 30 minutes. Welcome back to Clockwise, the tech podcast that goes out like a lamb, just gentle and soft. And oh my God, I don't know what happened. I didn't do that. I'm Dan Morin, and I am joined across the internet by my good friend, my pal, my co-host. It's the one and only Micah Sargent. How are you doing today, Micah?
I'm doing well, although there are all these sounds that keep happening and I don't know what to do about it. But, you know, who knows what will happen in this episode? And no, they are not me. The sounds are not me, although I could understand why.
They're coming from inside the podcast.
Well, but outside of this house.
This is the show where we invite on two fantastic guests to discuss four tech topics. To my left this week, it is the CEO / lackey at Rogue Amoeba and possible sound effects source, Paul Kafasis. Welcome back, Paul.
No comment.
Smooth.
And to my left, it's the executive director of Rebellion Pack. It is the one and only Brianna Wu. Hello, Bri.
I'm so excited to be here. I hope I can get tech support today for all my Rogue Amoeba products that I use. That's the real reason I said yes.
Tune into the overtime topic for that.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to kick things off. I am curious because I heard some people talking about this the week or two ago on another podcast. Do you use tethering on your iPhone? Do you use it as the way to connect your other devices, whether it be an iPad or a Mac or what have you, to the internet when you're, I don't know, at home, out and about, traveling, etc.? Paul, what about you?
I do, but not often. Why would I use it at home? Hopefully you have a good internet connection at home. Especially if you're in tech. But yeah, I find that every once in a while I'll be, I don't know, like in a car from the airport and I'll need to get something done on my computer, and tethering is the way to do it because my computer does not have any other way to get online. So I do use it once in a while. I appreciate it when I need it, and then I'll go months without using it.
I do, but not often. Yeah, I feel the same way. When I need to connect a device, of course, with Apple's whole setup, it makes it very easy to do because it will automatically display in your Wi-Fi settings and you can just click on it and it kind of makes the connection happen a little bit easier. And I have occasionally provided internet for, you know, a friend or somebody if we're out and about and they don't have that connection, or, you know, their hotspot costs a bunch of money or whatever. But yeah, it's very rarely that I do use it, but it's there if I need it. Brianna, what about you?
I'm so bougie. I pay for the super version of the iPad and I tether with that. Like, I've got it there on my phone, but it's just my experience that is so much more reliable on iPad, maybe because the antenna on it is larger and the battery is beefier. I don't know what it is. It just seems a lot more reliable.
Yeah, I mean, I was curious about this because I heard somebody decrying it as like, this is why I always buy the cellular iPad, because I don't want to ever deal with tethering. And I remember way back in the early days of the App Store, there was briefly an app that let you do tethering before Apple kicked it out of the store. And I held on to the app forever because I had gotten that app when it was there and it was removed from the store. But you could still, if you'd bought it or downloaded it or whatever, you could still use it. And it worked for quite some time. But now tethering has become, you know, it's part of the feature set. I've never spent the extra money because I just don't use it enough. I don't use the cell connection enough that I feel like I want to spend the money on an iPad and then the cellular service on top of that. And I found myself using it more recently because I've gone out, started going back and doing some work from coffee shops, and I find coffee shop Wi-Fi to be incredibly unreliable. For whatever reason, the tethering works great for those scenarios, and you know, Apple has really simplified the whole workflow of it. So I guess I don't feel as negative about it as some other people. That's kind of the feeling I retain for pairing Bluetooth peripherals with my iPad. Is that's the thing I will never do. But thank you all for your answers on that topic. Let's go to our second topic, which comes from Paul.
So mine is something that I've dealt with a bunch recently. If a friend or relative asks you for advice buying a Mac, what tips do you have for them?
My first tip that I usually give them is, if you can help it, buy it directly from Apple. I have heard about purchasing through third parties like Best Buy, and Best Buy loves to, you know, provide extra services that in many cases are not great and end up costing you more. Maybe you don't in the moment choose to get something like AppleCare for it, and then it becomes more difficult later to get AppleCare. And just by virtue of buying it directly, it's just been my experience that if you do have support issues, it's much easier to get help from Apple when it is through just that first party sale. My second bit of advice or tips, in almost every case, a MacBook Air is the right answer for the person when they're asking me, which one do I get? What do I get? MacBook Air. MacBook Air. With maybe the Mac Mini being the secondary option. But yeah, the big tip for me, and has always been, just if you can, get it directly from Apple. Brianna, what are your tips?
I really agree with you, Micah. MacBook Air, you cannot go wrong. I think it's really important, though. Something I've noticed with tech people is we tend to pick what we like, justify our last purchasing decisions with people and not really listen to them and hear what they want. Like, something I've noticed people do a lot is talk up the Mac Mini, which is probably, you know, the best value in the entire Apple line, and be like, yeah, if you've got an extra monitor around and a keyboard, you know, you can do this, where that may just be a little bit of a pain in the butt for a normal person, right? So the first thing I try to do is to ask smart questions, really understand what their needs are. Something John Gruber wrote about a long time ago that I think is really, really, really true is that there's a misnomer that normal people need like a very weak computer and us power users need like an ultra machine. I actually think it's the other way around, where normal users don't really understand like really thinking through what's installed on their machines, so they need bigger hard drives, right? They tend to install things that take up resources without thinking about it, so they tend to need like a more powerful machine. So I try to factor that in. And I think the most important thing, kind of piggybacking on your point, Micah, is always get them to get AppleCare. It's tough for people, even in the best of situations, to repair an Apple product by yourself. You don't want to be holding the bag on a cracked display or something like that.
Yeah, I'm with you both on the Air. I feel like that is ends up defaulting to the computer that I do recommend the most. The thing I find the trickiest to navigate is memory these days, because the conventional wisdom has always been get as much memory as you can afford. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think the question is, in sort of the new unified memory architecture system that Apple's done since Apple Silicon, like, what people need is not necessarily the same as what it used to be, because the base models do handle pretty well. And I see, again, a lot of tech reviewers saying like, oh, this is ridiculous. You need to buy 16 gigs of RAM before your computer's usable. And I was like, yeah, it really depends what you're doing with it. It honestly, like, you know, if you are mainly doing email and web browsing, I think 8 gigs of RAM is fine. Like, if you can't
unless you're
more,
using Google Chrome.
Yeah, well, yeah, don't, no, that's my tip. Other tip for them. Don't use Google Chrome. I think that, you know, it really for me is always about what are you going to use it for and what is your budget, right? Like, how can we best fit like the capability of the machine that you need into the budget you have? And I agree with both Breeze and Micah's tips about, AppleCare is great if you can afford it. I do think it is, you know, a good service, but I personally don't tend to buy it. And I don't tend to have too many repairs, but
knock
I can see
wood.
I'm knocking on every piece of these are none of this is real wood. But I do know people also who are like incredibly prone to those kinds of problems, and I do advise them to get it because it saves the time and the hassle later.
I feel so called out right now.
You don't come to me for advice. You know what you're doing. And yeah, I think the other question that ends up coming up to me the most is like peripheral stuff. But that's much less of an issue now than it used to be. Like,
are there even peripherals anymore?
Yeah, I don't. I find myself very rarely connecting things to my laptop. My Mac Mini on the desk does have a bunch of stuff permanently plugged into it. But even when I travel with my MacBook, I basically charge it, and, you know, every once in a blue moon need to plug in like a drive or a, you know, a flash drive or something, but, or a mic occasionally, but that's about it. So yeah, the differentiations are less than they used to be. Paul, why don't you wrap us up here?
Well, so you all touched on something that was in my notes for this, which is that the MacBook Air is the default recommendation. And now, unfortunately, there's two sizes of them. Mm. So you have to choose between those. But one thing nobody mentioned, but that I think is really interesting, is that the Apple refurbs are effectively brand new computers with a full warranty.
Yeah,
and so I always recommend those to people. You're saving $100, couple hundred bucks on every model. And the experience from Apple of getting a refurb is, aside from the box being a brown box instead of a white box, is about it's otherwise it's almost identical, and you save a whole bunch of money. The other one is that recently, and I think everyone here is a longtime Mac user, recently, like the past 5 years, maybe longer, but not much longer, you can actually get stuff on sale from Apple, either from Apple or from third parties. Micah was poo-pooing buying from a third party, but you know, B&H Photo in New York often has great deals on Macs for hundreds of dollars less than you'll get the same computer from Apple. So the things that I tell people are definitely look at the refurbs and see if there's a sale somewhere else.
I think that's well said. B&H is they're the one exception I would make.
Yeah, and again, it also depends on the level of the if I'm talking to somebody who doesn't have much knowledge of how to navigate all this stuff, that's typically where I'm going. First party. But
yep, absolutely.
Those of us who have a little bit more knowledge, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, you do you. I trust you.
I always look at the refurbs too, because they are. I agree with you, Paul. Those are a well kept secret in some ways.
Yeah, I was going to say I shouldn't even talk about it because now everyone's going to be looking at them. But they are really good, and unlike most places where you get like an open box return where things are missing or whatever, it's never that way when you get a refurb from Apple.
Yeah. All right, that is two topics down, two topics left to go, which of course means it's halftime here at Clockwise. And we have exciting news this week. As we have often told you in past weeks, we have Clockwise merchandise that's available at clockwise.social, or if you go to the cottonbureau.com and search for Clockwise, you know, we've offered shirts, hats, phone cases. We've got a new offering this week. We have now a tote bag. Ooh, yes. So you can pretend that you've supported us like your favorite public radio station and get a nice black tote bag with the gold Clockwise logo on it. Just go to clockwise.social. You'll see a link right there for the tote bag, as well as all our other merch, and purchasing some of it helps support the show. So we really appreciate it. All right, that's halftime. Done and dusted. Micah, what do you got for us?
My question for you, what is your notification style? Do you let all the apps send you notifications? Do you only limit it to messaging apps? Are you somewhere in between? Do you have a completely off the wall style? Tell me about your notification preferences. Brianna, we'll start with you.
Oh my God. So my job right now is for the 2024 election is to basically manage operations across TikTok, Discord, YouTube, Reddit, Twitter, and a whole bunch of online communities. So I am part of probably 10 million Discord servers and private rooms. So if I had notifications on, my phone would just ding and explode and vibrate until it fell down to its individual atomized components. So I have to turn all of it off or I will just go insane. And that's not even getting into my own personal social media and email. So I hate notifications. I have it wired so the only person that can get through to me is my husband. And, that's just the way I roll. How about you, Dan?
If I had to describe my notification strategy in one word, it would probably be chaos. I'm just not good at like managing it. I'm the person who gets the notification, like forgets notifications are on. And then every once in a while, I was like, I do get a lot of notifications. Maybe I should go through and triage those. And then I'm too lazy to do it. It's like right now I'm on the kick of like unsubscribing to emails that I'm, you know, ended up on mailing lists for. And I like that because it's very easy to do. And notification stuff has gotten better to manage on the phone. For one thing, I do use focus modes. That's one thing I find really handy. So specifically, I think I mainly rely on the driving and fitness focus modes so that, like, you know, when I have that on, the only people who can reach me are like I think my wife and my mom, and like, so very rarely do I get any notifications. I have one when podcasting too that does limit stuff. It's trickier there because sometimes I'll have like a little back channel going with some of my co-hosts, and it's like I do want to get those notifications in case there's something relevant. So messaging stuff tends to pop up there. I have almost no social media notifications. I used to have, you know, back when I actually used Twitter, I used to have DMs because like that was a way to actually message people, but none of the other services that now exist really have DMs. So I basically have those off with the exception of maybe Slack, I guess. So yeah. And then I have a ton of random ones. And sometimes I try to shuffle them into that like summary notification that iOS does. And I forget about them. And it's like, is this really helping me in any way? And then, yeah, I just get a lot of notifications that I'm like, ignore. I'm like, you know, maybe some days I'll have that. Like, should I turn those off? Maybe when I get around to it. Anyways, chaos. Yes, as I said. Paul, what about you?
So my one word for this is meataxing. This comes from an interview that Tim Cook did a few years ago where he said that he took a meatax to notifications on his phone. So that is, I advise everyone to meatax their notifications. Take back your life. Dan, I think you should go turn everything off.
Ooh.
As Brianna said, as I do, and then turn on just a few things. Okay. If you just take 5 minutes and turn everything off, you're going to be so much happier with your life.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, I have almost nothing that I allow through. My default is when an app asks, I tell it no. And then I'll every once in a while say, you know what? I do want messages to come through. I want Slack notifications to come through. I want my fantastical calendar alerts to come through. And that's mostly it. I think I realized I had like JetBlue and Amtrak notifications, so travel stuff, which, you know, your flight's delayed. Okay, that's good to know. And I want to get that as soon as I can. But otherwise, yeah, I am very much in the camp of you should not be letting your phone dictate what you're paying attention to.
I haven't meat axed.
Do it, Micah. Meat axe them.
I've come pretty close. The reason why I even included in my kind of prompt was, do you just limit it to messaging apps? Is because that's pretty much what I've done. I don't get notifications for emails. So that's the one messaging app that doesn't get through. And I do have a few, like Dan, a few random apps that I want to keep around. There's this app that I use called Rise Sleep, and it gets to get through. And then the internet connected garage door also gets to get through because it lets me know if I've accidentally left my garage door open. But outside of that, yeah, I mostly limit it to messaging apps, but perhaps
well, and
I will.
Micah, the garage door is not trying to sell you anything otherwise, right?
That's true. Yes, exactly. At least not yet.
The in-app purchases right. are really rough. Like, we'll open your door if you give us this many coins.
Right. Oh, no. Thank you all for
Don't
your answers.
Don't give them ideas, Dan.
Yeah,
Don't
exactly.
Do
Don't tell them.
Delete. Disavow.
Thank you all for your answers on that. Let us go to our next topic, which comes from Bree.
Gentlemen, we've had some fun discussions here. It's time to get to some serious depressing business. So I want for you to imagine that tomorrow you woke up and China had installed 20 million listening devices across the United States. This is exactly what has happened. TikTok has exploded in popularity. They've had 4 years to clean up their act. They've had repeated scandals. You've seen the employees of ByteDance who own TikTok. You've seen them get busted, literally spying on journalists, trying to figure out which of their employees were leaking. And they actually, as the House was trying to take up legislation to force a sale of TikTok so it could remain in American hands and have American law more uniformly applied, they actually went through and did a push notification asking all of their users to call their congresspeople and basically thwart the bill. So I wanted to get a temperature check from the room. With all of this, there are serious questions about, you know, free speech, foreign ownership of media. How do all of you feel about the TikTok ban, and would you support the Senate ratifying this?
Yeah, I like when you bring the nice, easy topics to cover in a minute and a half, I'm going to say.
With no nuance.
Yeah, boy. You know, I have actually followed this and thought about it a bit, and I kind of go back and forth because I do agree with the people saying, like, we do hold them to a higher standard than we hold American social media companies, which we probably should hold to a higher standard about data privacy and things like that. But there is a valid point that, like, you know, that information, is there a distinction by saying, well, we shovel all that information to private corporations as opposed to we shovel all that information to the Chinese government or have it available to them? And I would say probably somewhat. I'm not worried about it necessarily as about a surveillance issue, but I do have concerns about sort of the Chinese government having access to controlling potentially like things like disinformation or not policing things that may be relevant and to disinformation, especially in an election year, especially at times where there are ways that they might have a vested interest in pushing things one way or the other. I don't hold too much water with the idea of like, well, there's all this terrible stuff on TikTok, because again, true of basically every social media thing. You know, you can look at what Twitter has become and say it's not great either. And so I'm not sure that banning it is the right move. And also the idea of forcing it to sell to an American company feels weird, kind of protectionist and nativist. And I don't really like, it makes me uncomfortable to think that you can actually mandate that, but there are certainly concerns about it. And TikTok's approach to that of like, let's set up a subsidiary where we try to like basically reduce the, you know, how much of this is accessible by the Chinese government, seems like it did not really manage to catch on. So I don't think it would personally affect me as somebody who does not consume a lot of TikTok, but I don't also want to say like, oh, so they should just ban it because it doesn't affect me personally, because obviously it will affect a great many people. And so I think it's something that needs to be considered carefully. I'm not sure that our government is always one to do that, especially when it comes to technological measures. So I'm a little skeptical of it, but I guess I understand the concerns. There, I've hedged all my bets. Paul, what do you got? Woof.
Oh, I'll just co-sign everything. No. Everything Dan said is certainly things that I've thought about this. I don't use TikTok at all, and so it's not going to impact me, but I am concerned about the idea of forcing a company to sell. And so the whole thing I have concerns about. I don't have enough knowledge to say this is what we should definitely do or this is what we shouldn't do. I will say something I do think we should definitely do is something Dan briefly touched on, is I think there should be better data protection with every social network so that this is not an issue with TikTok. It's not an issue with Instagram. It's not an issue with Facebook, et cetera. I'd rather see a law get passed that protected our data on all of these networks, potentially impacted how algorithms worked so that we could see what's being pushed on people or why it's being pushed on people. So I guess I sit in the camp of, you know, why TikTok versus anything else? And the short answer is, oh, well, the Chinese government. But I'm not sure that that's a good enough reason why we should focus on that and not pay any attention to what Facebook and Twitter and every other social network are doing.
I'm feeling very similarly. I think that it is obviously a very difficult topic, but I do feel kind of icky about the focus of it being a Chinese company, and you either become not Chinese by selling to someone or you get out of our country is on the face of it kind of troublesome. There have been, yes, patterns of potential surveillance, and that is concerning. And so I get why this is ongoing. There's a part of me that feels like we don't have the full picture and that there is more to this, given how much push there is behind getting this app either out of our country or getting some way of, you know, again, making it not American or making it not Chinese, essentially. And I think that I would feel more comfortable if I did have that whole picture that it's like, oh, by the way, we, the CIA, the FBI, the NSA, have even more proof that this is just a spying apparatus. Oh, suddenly I'm more on board and I totally get it. Without that, it does feel kind of xenophobic at times, and the questioning of the CEO at times kind of proved that out. And I just, there are lots of questions, but as far as all of this goes, one big concern I have, and I hope that it's dealt with, is in a world where TikTok is banned due to its popularity among a group of people who are super into viral style videos, and viral style videos that teach you how to do things, little tutorials. My concern is that there will be several tutorials out there showing people how to bypass any ban and download and jailbreak your device so that you can install a version of TikTok that still works in the U.S. Like, I think it's going to be a mess, and that concerns me a lot. Now I'm going to stop talking, and I'm curious to hear where Brianna Wu stands on this topic.
So I heard a lot of claims here, and I just want to take them head on. I don't hedge on this. I think it's very much in our national security to do this. And so I want to take some of these claims head on. Micah, you were talking about how it feels kind of icky to like single out a Chinese company for this. There's actually an extremely long history in the United States of holding foreign ownership of media to much higher standards. We've done this with radio. We've done it with TV. Rupert Murdoch himself had to become an American citizen before he could buy a bunch of television stations, believe it or not. I think these are good laws. And I think that, you know, our highest principle is democracy. And we can't have a democracy if we don't have some level of control over our information space. It is just simply true that, TikTok has censored tools about the Uyghur genocide, for instance. I think it raises a lot of questions about how we can determine our own destiny here. Additionally, I really feel like there's this, I call it the tech merry-go-round. I can't tell you how many times I've sat on a panel and people like we're hyper educated about this, and we will like point out how a piece of legislation won't solve all of our problems. And it's often true because we understand the dynamics. But legislation doesn't work that way, and public policy doesn't work that way. Public policy is the business of hitting singles all day long and improving things over time. And, you know, getting something like this that starts the ball rolling so we can pick off different pieces of this later, that makes a lot of sense to me. This is something with a very broad left and right appeal, because ideally, you know, left versus right politics should stop at the United States border. So I think that this makes a lot of sense to me personally. And thirdly, I really feel like we are discounting the level of information and control that the PRC is going to get over here. I think sometimes when we talk about like, well, American companies have access to data, I think like respectfully, people have not worked on actually absorbing large amounts of data from social media companies. This is literally my job. They don't throw you the keys to the database and let you do CSV exports of everything in there until you can micro-target what you want. They actually keep a lot of control over their own data and will only give you lists in very specific contexts and often prefer not to give you that list at all. That's a huge difference from the PRC being able to go to ByteDance and say, I want information on this public official's child. I want to see what they are looking at. I want to see what they are like thinking about this. And I want to tweak the algorithm so a large segment of the American public believes X, Y, and Z. I do think this is a really important issue. And I think we've really taken the keys to our democracy for granted for far too long.
All right, that's four topics down. We've just in time for a bonus topic and to take a total left turn from really serious topics to incredibly trivial topics. I'm just going to ask, toast, butter, or jam, Paul?
¿Por qué no las dos?
I knew someone was going to say it.
I will just say butter, although I am a both kind of guy.
For me, neither. Both those are gross. Like, you're going to eat 120 calories of butter or just pure sugar? Like, if I want sugar, I'm going to go eat some good sugar and not something out of a jar that's loaded with preservatives. Ugh. No. Well,
That we covered the entire possible spectrum here. That's great. I will say I do like both as well, but not in the same time. I like to separate them. Okay. Hey, if you'd like to get ad-free episodes with an extra overtime topic every week, you can become a member of Clockwise. Just go to relay.fm/clockwise and sign up for just $7 per month or $70 a year, and you'll help support the show. In this week's overtime topic, we are discussing immersive 3D virtual film and TV series. And with that, we reach the end of this week's episode. All that remains is for us to thank our fantastic guests. Paul Kvasis, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Brianna, woo! Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
And thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you next week. But until then, we remind you, watch what you say.
And keep watching the clock.
Bye, everybody.